the Market, sponsored by the CME Group. Dateline, Friday, June 22nd, Chicago, Illinois. Hello again. Along with Max Armstrong, I'm Orion Samuelson for our weekly get-together to take a look at a fascinating marketplace, whether it's Wall Street or agricultural commodities. And there was a lot, as always, going on this week. First of all, the trade issues did not go away. They are still there. But let's take a look at what happened today on the final trading day of the week, because a lot of attention was focused on the Dow Industrial Average. It was fighting an eight-day losing streak. And in addition to that, had the Dow closed lower, it would have been the longest losing streak in 40 years. But it didn't close lower. It closed higher. The S&P 500, the Dow Industrial Average, climbed today because of oil and also some other stocks on Wall Street. But U.S. crude oil settled up 4.6% at $68.58 a barrel. Brent settled 3.4% higher at $75.55. This coming after oil producers agreed to modest crude output increases to compensate for losses in production at a time of rising global demand. And so the impact of that decision by the OPEC countries meeting in Vienna and the impact on the numbers in the oil market, we saw ExxonMobil up 2%, Chevron also up 2%. They were the two biggest boosts to the S&P. A rally in oil prices because of that OPEC earlier decision to restrict supply has given the sector a gain of more than 11% for the quarter to date, and that's best among the 11 major S&P groups. One strategist in New York said, "That is the big news of the day, both the OPEC news and just the reaction of the stocks as well." So the Dow Industrial Average gained 119 points. It closed at 24,580. The S&P 500 gained 5 points to close at 2754. The NASDAQ dropped 20 points to end the week at 7692. And for the week, the Dow lost 2%. Its weakest weekly performance since late March. The S&P 500 fell 0.9%. The NASDAQ declined 0.7%. But trade worries continued to hang over the market as President Trump, in his latest move, threatened to impose a 20% tariff on all European Union car imports. The announcement came a month after the administration launched a probe into whether auto imports pose a threat to national security. Again, the analyst said, certainly the longer it drags out, the market is bound to see some pressure, at least in some sectors and with certain companies. Let's look at Harley-Davidson. It fell 2.3%. The maker of motorcycles in the past warned of a significant impact on its sales if the European Union decides to increase duties on motorcycles in retaliation. So this just added to the worries about the China-U.S. trade spat, which escalated this week after the president threatened to impose tariffs on $200 billion of Chinese imports, and Beijing vowed to retaliate. This is a game that I recall from my childhood, when we'd get into arguments that went, "My dad is better or stronger than your dad," and that argument is still going on in the trade world. And so the trade argument has pushed the Dow index lower for the past eight sessions because big industrial companies like Boeing and Caterpillar have weighed on the index and put it on pace for its weekly performance, in its worst weekly performance in 13 weeks. So quite a difficult day on Wall Street once again, but let's look at some more positive news, perhaps, on the oil situation, because oil prices climbed sharply today after oil producers agreed to modest crude output increases to compensate for losses in production at a time of rising global demand. The Organization of Petroleum Exporting Countries, OPEC, meeting in Vienna, agreed to raise output from July about 1 million barrels per day. The real increase, however, will be around 770,000 barrels, according to some of the members of OPEC. So that's a look at the week just ended. Let's look at the week just ahead, and it's going to be a busy one on the report scene. A busy week, loaded with reports on housing, consumer spending, and inflation. On Monday, the Commerce Department likely to report that new home sales rose 1.5%. Data on Tuesday will likely show the S&P Case-Shiller 20 City House Price Index went up 6.8% year-on-year, and a report from the Conference Board expected to show its Consumer Confidence Index unchanged at a reading of 128 in June. On Wednesday, the Commerce Department will issue its advance estimates for May goods trade deficit, retail and wholesale inventory. It's also expected to report that durable goods orders fell 0.6% in May. Then on Thursday, the Commerce Department publishes its third estimate for first quarter gross domestic product, expected to show output growing at a 2.2% rate as reported last month. Then on Friday, the Commerce Department likely will show that consumer spending went up 0.4% in May after increasing 0.6% in April. So a lot of government reports to look at, but there will be a earnings report or two as well. Nike, the world's largest athletic footwear maker, expected to report an increase in fourth quarter revenue and profit on Thursday, helped by new releases and higher sales of its VaporMax, Air Max 270, Epic React range. And sales growth in North America will be in focus after the company reported negative growth in the region now for three straight months. The 35 largest U.S. banks are expected to put more money toward dividends, share buybacks, and business investments after clearing the first stage of an annual regulatory stress test this week. But the results showed they have enough capital to withstand an extreme recession. Meanwhile, many of the governors of the Federal Reserve will be on the speaking circuit again this week. Walgreens Boots Alliance expected to report an increase in third quarter revenue on Thursday. Accenture expected to post an increase in third quarter profit and revenue on Thursday. And Lennar Corporation expected to report higher revenue for the second quarter on Tuesday, helped by strong housing demand, which is supported by an expanding economy and job growth. Lennar is the number two U.S. home builder. Home furnishings retailer Bed Bath & Beyond expected to report a drop in first quarter profit on Wednesday. Conagra Brands, the Ready Whip whipped cream maker, expected to report an increase in quarterly revenue on Thursday. And increased demand for high-margin Corona and Modelo beer likely to boost Constellation Brands' first quarter sales as well. The other report that will be watched, because it's an indication of whether or not U.S. consumers are spending on fun things to do, Carnival Corporation, the world's largest cruise operator, expected to report an increase in quarterly revenue and that will be helped by robust demand for its Caribbean cruises amid rising consumer confidence in the United States. However, the company's quarterly profit and full-year profit forecast may come under pressure from higher fuel costs. So that's a little look at what we're going to see next week. And an interesting note today as well, as we ended the trading week, despite strong objections from President Trump, General Motors is going ahead with its plan to manufacture the new Chevrolet Blazer SUV in Mexico. The president has been pressing automakers to build more vehicles in the United States under efforts to renegotiate the North American Free Trade Agreement. And a Friday announcement from Tesla, the car maker, the electric car maker. It moved last week to cut 9% of its workforce, downsizing the residential solar business it bought 2 years ago in a controversial deal that cost $2.6 billion. The latest cuts to that solar division, once known as Solar City. It's a sales and installation company founded by two cousins of Tesla CEO Elon Musk, include closing about a dozen installation facilities. So that's what's going on. That's what happened in the world of Wall Street the past week. When we come back, Max Armstrong will visit with Brian Basting of Advanced Trading, headquartered in Bloomington, Illinois. And they'll talk about the agricultural committee or commodity business when we continue on The Market, sponsored by the CME Group.
For more than 150 years, CME Group has been built with your confidence. Without it, we simply wouldn't be in business. Today, we continue to work on new and better ways to protect you and grow your confidence in the markets. After all, it's our vigilance that brings you the peace of mind you need today and in the future. CME Group. Advance with confidence.
Brian Basting joins us here from Bloomington, Illinois, Advanced Trading. Well, it's not just been breathtaking, it's been ugly, hasn't it, from the producer's standpoint, to see a couple of dollars wiped off on the value of soybeans, not quite a dollar on corn, but it's been substantial there, and to see so much uncertainty in play. I guess the certainty that we have is the crop condition rating at the moment. Corn looks so good, and so do the soybeans.
It's certainly backed up with the crop condition ratings at the moment, Max. We're looking at some historically strong ratings for corn and some really, really strong ratings for beans, too. Now, having said that, that's only, of course, as of mid-June. And, of course, as your listeners know, we got a long way to go. But the market remembers last year, too, that crop condition ratings were low, and we ended up with a very strong crop. So sometimes the market may discount these crop condition ratings. The market is not doing that today, however.
We have seen, generally speaking, crop condition ratings go down as the season goes on, but that hasn't always been the case. I mean, we've seen an exception or two to that. It's very possible that this corn condition rating could continue to be this high, I suppose, as the season goes on.
That's certainly a possibility. I wrote a piece on that within the last week or two, Max, and you'd look at the last 30 years of history since they started the crop conditions, I believe, in 1986, and you do have some years where you do see the crop condition ratings start high and falter, but as you mentioned, you do have years where you see the ratings start high and hold high throughout the entire summer, in some cases even nudge a bit higher.
The rains that we've been getting over a widespread area of the Corn Belt in recent days have been excessive in some spots, but generally speaking, rain is good for the crop, isn't it?
Yeah, generally speaking, there are some areas that really needed that rain. Western Illinois, for example, was getting quite dry. Parts of eastern, southeastern Iowa. One area that continues to be dry, I have not seen what the latest forecast is. Missouri has just struggled a bit here this summer, or late this spring and summer. But some of those areas, as you mentioned, were dry and needing some rain. Some areas have received too much, but that's the exception rather than the overall rule at this point.
The thing that occurs to me, too, dumping these rains in, we got off to such a great start with this crop. As you've driven down the roads and you've looked at just at least that eyeball inspection, the windshield inspection from along the road, boy, it's a good even stand. Not nearly as many wet spots out there as we've seen in other years.
Yeah, people have a tendency to forget in 2017, Max, even though we ended up with a stellar corn yield, there were many instances in 2017 where we had replant of corn, even replant of replant, and it still ended up with a great yield. This year, most of that crop, as you mentioned, if you planted 35, 36,000 plants, nearly all of them have come up. So the emergence level has been good. The stands are good. Now, we've got a long way to go. We don't want to get ahead of ourselves too far here, but so far this crop is off to a fine start.
We will see some Illinois crop silking in just a few days from what I'm hearing. West central part of the state, especially southern part of the state, I've been hearing that from some growers that really, when you take a look at it, especially when you get into the last week of June, it's going to be ahead of schedule. The heat has really brought this crop along, hasn't it?
I keep a database on growing degree units, and there's no question that these warm days and warm nights have really added up those GDUs the last 3 to 4 weeks here. And there's no doubt we're already seeing some silking taking place here throughout Illinois.
This moisture foundation, if you will, this rain that we've been getting, where these crops have sufficient moisture at this point, it should help that pollination process, should it not, in helping carry along toward a successful pollination?
Yeah, you look at the history, and I've talked to some of my agronomy friends over the years, you do want to have good moisture moving into pollination, and you do want to get a shot of moisture right after pollination, but still, as your listeners all know, Max, there's a lot of uncertainty with that pollination process. You can have a great-looking crop, and all of a sudden you get a week to 10 days of warm temperatures and dryness. It could hurt the crop. But having said that, yes, I agree that you hit the nail on the head. You want to have that moisture moving into pollination.
Before we quit talking about the crop and start talking about trade, as far as the crop is concerned, most years we do get some kind of a weather bump as this season goes on. As we move past June and into July for the corn crop and August for the soybean crop, it's very common to see weather nervousness and that reflected in price, is it not?
That's true, particularly when you look at the world demand at the moment. The world demand is exceptionally strong still. We're looking, for example, with U.S. corn, a record amount of unshipped corn export sales on the books here as of mid-June. Part of that, of course, is due to the smaller crops in South America, but part of it's due to the growing demand. So I guess my point there is that we need to grow another big crop here in the U.S. To meet that growing demand that we've seen materialize across the world.
While the trade dispute with China has focused on soybeans, there has been spillover effect into corn. It's hurt the corn market, too, has it not?
Yeah, it's a psychological spillover into the corn.
Psychological. And to this point, much of this damage in the grain market has been just that, has it not?
Actually, the unshipped soybean sales of U.S. soybeans to the rest of to the entire world is record high for this time of year. This is old crop, 17-18 crop for the moment. The issue, of course, arises going forward to see when and if these tariffs are applied, how that's going to affect our sales. Brazil just finished harvesting their largest soybean crop ever in 2018. Brazil cannot meet all of China's needs, but they can meet a good portion of the Chinese needs. Then you look at other issues like substitution that China can do and so on and so forth. There are a lot of moving pieces, but it definitely has the potential to have a big impact later into summer and into fall.
There is so much to speculate about this whole thing. If the tariffs were to go into place and the Chinese still had the need for the beans and the Brazilians didn't have them, is there even the possibility Brazil would buy beans from the United States to fulfill orders for the Chinese market? I guess stranger things have happened. Huh?
You just took the words right out of my mouth. Stranger things have happened. I think another moving piece of this 2018 puzzle is the short crop we saw in Argentina. And so all of a sudden you got the largest soybean meal exporter in the world, Argentina, with a crop that's down about a third from what it was last year. So there would be another candidate also for maybe some imports there. So This is the next 6 to 8 months. I would stretch that all the way out into next spring with the growing season in South America once again. Is going to be very dynamic as far as what shakes out. Obviously, the market earlier this week took a catastrophic view with price collapsing there on Monday. We'll see what happens Monday, Tuesday, what happens here moving forward. But historic times we're living in right now.
When you get to such a certain price level and other markets around the world, now I recognize the fact that 65% of the beans moving in the global market are those purchased by China. But other buyers have to look at this and say, oh, my goodness, this is a fire sale. Do they not? I mean, and say, well, we need to not only cover our needs, but maybe cover our needs for a while here, if they're able to do so.
Yeah, it's well said. I think that an end user in this environment is looking at this as an opportunity, whether it's for soybean meal or for corn. End users have been monitoring this, and I would think that would be, as you mentioned, a fire sale, a great opportunity for them.
The livestock sector has to look at this very closely, do they not, and say, my goodness, will we continue to have this kind of bargain prices later on in the year? What kind of advice are you sharing?
It certainly is an opportunity for an end user, whether you're an overseas buyer or, as you mentioned, the livestock poultry folks here domestically. An attractive strategy to consider would be to purchase a call option. A call option gives the buyer and end user a ceiling in the market, but allows them to participate if the market continues to go lower. So a call option, obviously those options have decreased in value substantially with this sell-off. So that'd be one strategy to consider.
And to the producer who's watched this gut-wrenching experience here in recent days and looking out the window of the farm office or out the kitchen window and looking at crops that look pretty good with a tremendous yield potential and hearing that across the Corn Belt, what do you tell them?
Well, you always want to, in a producer standpoint, you always want to think about defending your balance sheet. How are you going to use the marketing tools available to defend that balance sheet? Obviously, you're looking for an opportunity now to protect bushels you have that already either forward sold or forward protected with a hedge. Some type of rebound here, I think you do want to get coverage on. Again, a put option there gives you a floor in the market, but also leaves you the opportunity to participate if, as you mentioned earlier, we get a weather rally here this summer, for example. A put option does not lock you out of those higher prices, so get a put option in place here. Gives you that downside catastrophic protection, but also gives you an opportunity to participate if the market does have a rebound here.
If you look at the charts and what we've seen happen here, is this an ugly signal for where we're going?
Yeah, if you look at the December 18 corn futures, for example, it's got a double top at 429.5. That's the top that the market made in the summer of 17, and that's the top that the market made to this point prior to Memorial Day. So one would say as a technician that's an ugly-looking picture. Much can change, though. I mean, that's only that's about 50, 60 cents away now. But if we get into a weather market rally, things can change in a hurry. So I think that's something to be aware of, but it's not in stone at the moment.
As badly beaten as these markets are, if there were to be some significant encouraging news suddenly on the trade front, the bounce could be very vibrant, could it not? I know we're speculating here, and there are a lot of ifs involved, but the producer needs to be prepared if that happens.
Yes, well said. I think that the short covering that could develop in that environment would be brisk, as you said, not only from the short covering from a speculative side, but also the end user coverage, I think, would spike up. So, yes, I think that would be an opportunity, again, to get some protection in place. I still like that idea of being as flexible as possible, moving into a critical part of the growing season. I would add this, not only our weather season, but also the Black Sea. We've got some issues with some dryness, for example, in parts of Ukraine and Russia. And Ukraine especially has become a key corn exporter in the world. I think that's an area to watch here the next 30 to 60 days. So it's not just the U.S. weather. It's also the Black Sea weather will be very important to watch, as well as China.
Brian, thanks for coming in.
Always good to be with you, Max.
For more than 150 years, CME Group has been built with your confidence. Without it, we simply wouldn't be in business. Today, we continue to work on new and better ways to protect you and grow your confidence in the markets. After all, It's our vigilance that brings you the peace of mind you need today and in the future. CME Group. Advance with confidence.
Well, at the end of the week, a lot of people were talking about the fact that we have a farm bill after the vote that took place on Thursday in the House. I'm not one of those who feel we have a farm bill until it reaches the president's desk and is signed. Because after a month of political gamesmanship to force votes on, well, controversial immigration reform measures and other measures not related to the farm bill, Thursday the House approved their version of the 2018 farm bill, causing everybody to, well, not everybody, but a lot of people to say, hey, we've got a farm bill. But I don't think so. The vote was 213 yes, 211 no. And congressional Democrats were unanimous in their opposition to the farm bill, and another 20 Republican members voted against the bill. And according to the chairman of the House Ag Committee, Mike Conaway of Texas, today's vote was about keeping faith with rural America and about the enduring promise of the dignity of a day's work. Conaway said it was about providing certainty to farmers who have been struggling under the weight of a five-year recession and about providing our neighbors in need with more than just a handout, but a hand up. American Farm Bureau Federation President Zippy Duval called passage of the House Farm Bill a big win for American farmers, and he acknowledged that Farm Bureau members clearly made their voices heard and that House members recognized the serious economic challenges facing the U.S. farmer. But because of the difference in the two bills, the House and the Senate version on what used to be the food stamp program is now the SNAP program, I'm not so sure the conference between the House and Senate ag committees and, well, the House and Senate entirely is going to be a simple one without controversy, because there have been some changes made in the House bill that will change the way people are able to get nutrition programs and nutrition help. So, again, until the bill is on the president's desk and he signs it, I don't think we yet have a farm bill. Now, let's look at the cattle on feed report that came out this afternoon. Ranchers in May put more cattle into feedlots than anticipated compared with the same period a year ago. The data also showed the June 1st feedlot cattle supply climbed 4.1% from a year earlier, and that's its highest for the month since USDA began tabulating the data in 1996. Analysts attributed last month's unexpected feedlot inflow to a surge in calves and feeder cattle from Canada and Mexico. USDA's report showed May placements at 2.1 million head, compared with a few less than that a year earlier. The government put the feedlot cattle supply as of June 1st at 11.5 million head. That's up 4.1% from 11 million a year ago. And USDA said the number of cattle sold to packers or marketed up 5.4% from a year ago. And so we are going to have maybe not quite as much reaction when they start trading cattle at the Mercantile Exchange on Friday. Cattle today ended with a June contract down 22 cents and the August feeder cattle contract up 72 cents. Grain market, biggest gain today in the soybean market. Nearby July soybeans up 16 cents a bushel. Corn was unchanged and wheat down 5 3/4 of a penny per bushel. Oh, we're out of time again. How quickly it goes. But it looks like an interesting week ahead as we continue to work on the farm bill and continue to work on some of the trade debates that we're currently dealing with or trying to. Anyway, thank you for joining us, Max Armstrong. I'm Orion Samuelson, and that's our time on the market, sponsored by the CME Group.